Accession number 3790, Reel 7.
Mr. Johnson, Reel 7.
Yes. Well, the I said before that some of the Alien Pioneer Coal companies were dissolved. I can't exactly recollect the order, but I recollect that besides the companies which went to France in 1939-40, which were the numbers 69, 74, 87, 88, and 93, other companies had been formed since, which comprised 77, 137, 165, 220, I think also 219, 229, 246, 248, and 251. And the following companies served in Scotland. It was 137 and 249. And they were considered as the happiest companies because the atmosphere in Scotland vis-a-vis the foreigners was quite different to southern England.
What do you mean by that?
Well, the relationship between the local population. And the same applied for the Polish companies who were serving in Scotland. Now, I want to stress this, because we had the misfortune, 220, to be stationed first in Gloucestershire and then in Hampshire. And Gloucestershire and Hampshire, just like Kent, are the most unfriendly counties in the southern in England. I don't know where the others were stationed. 87, 88 were at Long Marston, which is near Evesham. Number 229 was at Newbury. 246 was in Shrewsbury. 248 was in Kettering, which was an army dump.
Can you give me an example of this unfriendliness?
Well, the local population were unfriendly. When you asked for a lift, they ran you to the police station and had you locked up. Or argued why the hell are you in the British Army? You should be in the German Army. And we had to give a long explanation why. And it never sank in with the bastards. Anyway, 165 Company was stationed at Bicester outside Oxford, and 251 apparently also. Now, regarding 165, I must bring in something rather amusing. When we returned from Australia, we were preceded by some of the NCOs who had been guarding us on the Dunera, and they were posted to 165 Company, the Bicester. Naturally, our friends at 165 knew their history. So the first Friday, the two sergeants arrived. They were made blind drunk on Friday after pay parade, and they went into their billets, and when they were fast asleep, it was in the winter, our boys went in, stripped them naked, plastered them over with dubbin or black shoe polish, and then threw buckets of cold water over them and let them lie. Well, next morning on parade, the major, I think his nickname was Fiji Howard, because he served in Fiji as a governor, had the company on parade and wanted to know why and what happened and who were the culprits. Of course, nobody owned up, but it gradually sunk in with him what had happened. He was informed why these sergeants were treated this way. And then there was no recrimination, and the company was dismissed and nobody was charged. He didn't try to find out, and the two sergeants asked for a transfer. Anyway.
Apart from that, how was your relationship with your officers and NCOs?
Well, we had the NCOs, we were split up in platoons. Platoon comprised two sections. Each section had 28 men. And we had in each platoon an English sergeant and a Continental sergeant. And the corporals were all Continentals and the Lance corporals as well. We had in our 220 company a group who came, had been members of the French Foreign Legion, which was rather interesting. We had a Scotch, we had a couple of Portuguese. We had two or three Finnish sailors. We had a couple of Frenchmen. We had a Lance Corporal Pomeroli, who was Swiss, a very smart man, and a few other nationalities. And they were, of course, non-Jewish, and they were very smart as soldiers, very efficient soldiers. But of course, they liked the bottle, whilst our boys didn't drink very much.
And what about the officers?
Well, the officers at that time were all English or British. It was at a later stage that we had some alien officers, some of our people who had been in Octo and became officers. And when we were in Gloucester, we were sent a sergeant from the catering corps to take charge of our kitchen, which was very much resented by our kitchen staff, who were excellent cooks. Some of them were amateurs. The amateurs were the best cooks, but we had a couple of butchers, and butchers in Germany and Poland and Austria were also trained cooks. And we had a soup cook who was actually a pastry cook. He did the soups and he did the paste, the sweets. Anyway, when we were sent this man from the catering corps, whenever he was on duty, there was something missing. Either there was no margarine, or there was no sugar, or there was no salt. So whenever he was on duty, there was a complaint to the orderly officer that the food was no good. And apparently, eventually, he took the hint, and he asked for a transfer. And one of our fellows became Sergeant Cook. That's what we wanted.
How did the British officers feel about being officers of an alien pioneer corps?
Well, we had the Major Howard. No, what's his name, Howard? Yes, we had a Major Howard as well. I just remembered, not only Fitchy Howard, 165. Howard, he was not a very well-educated man. I don't know what his profession was. Our adjutant, the captain, I can't remember his name, but his nickname was Heydrich, which meant he must have been a bastard. He was a manager of a laundry at Cosham, I think, or Havant, outside Portsmouth, and he was very much disliked. The lieutenants were okay, and that was Gloucester, wasn't it? Right. From Gloucester, at Gloucester, we were split up, and the headquarter company went to Missenden, not far from Stroud, and one detachment, I think, went to Cicester, Cirencester, better known, and our left half went to Petersfield in Hampshire, where we were first under canvas, and then afterwards huts were built. And we were stationed at a place called Stroud, or Stroud, outside Petersfield, and there we were attached to New Zealanders. And after a couple of months, my platoon was split off and went to a place called White Hill on the Hampshire-Surrey border, just outside Borden, where the Canadians were stationed. And there we had a Lieutenant Rhodes, who had been working for the Workers' Education Association in the West or East Riding of Yorkshire, and who was a great fan of education for the troops. Well, our Lieutenant Rhodes had been a sergeant in the tanks and had been upgraded to lieutenant after leaving Octo and was given the opportunity to choose where to go. He was told either infantry or pioneer corps. Anyway, he was not considered suitable for the tanks because of his age, and so as he didn't want to join the infantry to go over the top, he volunteered to join the alien pioneer corps because he heard the food was so good. He chose well. He chose one of the companies where the food was best. And the army sent him twice on courses to toughen him up to join the infantry, but he managed to get out of it. He started an educational course of lectures, once weekly lectures, thanks to his contacts with the local education authorities. Some headmaster from Guildford was invited to lecture us on various literary subjects. Attendance was, of course, 100%, because it was a pleasant evening spent listening to an intelligent man. And when he couldn't get any more outside lectures, he inquired, is there anybody here who can lecture, who's got subjects to lecture on? And we had a dozen people, I think, who were better qualified than the headmaster from Guildford. We had an economist, and we had several teachers and lecturers and what have you, and a banker, and we had somebody who'd been trained in theology, who was quite well known on the BBC, Reverend Oestreicher. He was a lance corporal in our platoon. He has lost his Austrian accent by now, I noticed on the BBC. Anyway, we had a very good time. And he sent in reports about these magnificent lectures he had arranged, his own initiative. And so eventually he finished up as deputy director of education in Oxford, a cushy job. And after the war he went back to the Workers' Education Association. Comes there. Well, when I was in Petersfield, I was in the timber party, partly that means felling trees, and partly in the sawmill at Woolmer Mill. Now Woolmer Mill is on the military railway which goes from Liphook, or Lys, I forget, to Longmoor Camp, which was the headquarters of the Royal Engineers. It goes through Woolmer and finishes up at Olden, near Aldershot. This has been the training ground of the British Army's Royal Engineers, railway engineers, during the First War and in the Second World War. And which was very useful, that if he went on pass, we could go either to Farnham or northwest, or we could go down to Lys or Liphook and catch the main line to London. Anyway, as we were working at Woolmer, it was considered better if part of our detachment went to stay at Whitehill, which was much nearer to Woolmer than be at Petersfield. And so our platoon, which meant Section 5 and 6, under Sergeant Stewart and Sergeant Lang, went to stay at Woolmer, outside Woolmer at White Hill, and we stayed at a house which previously had been a home for unmarried mothers. Anyway, Sergeant Lang came from Cologne. He was in his 50s, a very agile youngster, and Sergeant Stewart, our Scotchman, he was in charge of the platoon. Anyway, half the section worked at the mill at Woolmer, and one section worked at the mill under the New Zealanders, and one section worked in the bush, which was me. And we were firstly near Woolmer, on Woolmer Forest, and later on in Ellis Forest. Ellis Forest is just south of Farnham, and I visited Ellis Forest 3 years ago, and to my dismay discovered that they have not done any reforestation. which is a bloody shame. It was a beautiful forest. Anyway, when I was out there working in the sawmill one day, a tall fella, Neuwelt by name, he changed his name later on, and I were lifting pit pops made of oak, 5 foot long, off a lorry, onto a lorry, and the things, as I was smaller than he, the thing dropped on my finger, on my left index finger, and cracked the top limb. And so I had to go down to the medical room. I had to hitchhike to the medical room, and I was told off, shouted at by the medical officer, why I did not report during the official hours, which was an hour before. So I said, sir, as the accident happened an hour after you finished, I couldn't. So he told me, shut up, you bastard. You should report when the hours are on, when the medical hours are on. And his report in my medical report said, crushed finger, but he didn't do anything for me. He didn't even bandage it. My finger, apparently I must have torn a muscle or tendon, because the finger became a hook. It was just like this, the thing here. And I didn't know what to do. Anyway, I went, that was happened on a Friday, so on Saturday I went on, didn't have a pass, but didn't need a pass. I went to Farnham, saw the local photographer, who was an Austrian, asked him if he knew anybody at the hospital. He gave me an introduction to the local hospital, where they x-rayed my finger, found that the joint had a break, had a fracture, and the doctor, who was not qualified for bone work, at least he put a splint on it and plastered it up, and with elastic plaster, and so it was at least kept straight. And so next day I went, Monday I went back to work, because I couldn't use my left hand, I could only use the saw with the right. And after a couple of weeks I went on leave, and immediately made an appointment with a Harley Street man. And as I couldn't get hold of the x-ray, I explained to him what the x-ray looked like. I gave him a diagram, having had enough medical knowledge for this. And he took the plaster off, and I had a hook. So he said, well, I can't guarantee that the finger will go back. I put it in plaster. You have to keep the plaster on for 6 weeks. And he said, I'll try to save it. If you're lucky, the tendon will grow together and the finger will remain stiff. But anyway, you see again, it's not so bad. Anyway, if I had gone by the army, I would have had a hook on that finger, thanks to the medical treatment. Anyway, when we were in White Hill, outside Borden, we used the Canadian canteen at Borden, and we paired up with quite a number of the Canadians, which was in 1942.
How would you compare the Canadians with the British soldiers that you knew?
Well, amongst the Canadians, we paired up with the Jewish chaps, and they were of a high intellectual standard again, and we found, because they were better educated, and also the other Canadians, they were a very friendly lot. For them, we were not the Limeys like for the Australians. The Canadians were party townies and party country people, and we were attached to Canadians, Canadian Forestry Corps. No, sorry. There we were not with the Canadians. We were with the New Zealanders, and they were a nice lot, very nice lot, because the New Zealanders saw that we were townies, and we were doing a job which we were not accustomed to, and they gave us very high credit for what we were doing, because we were doing as well as some of their lumberjacks, because we used our brain and they used their bone, and we got on exceedingly well. And we had a Maori captain who was a millwright and who planned the sawmill which we were building and which we operated afterwards. And he told when our captain came around once from Gloucester to inspect, he doesn't want to see any officers from Petersfield or from headquarters there, because he was going to chase them off the workshop, because they only interfered and their discipline was absolutely unwarranted, because we were workmen and we were doing a magnificent job as far as they were concerned. So the officers didn't show up, nor the sergeant major. And whilst the British sergeants were not used to doing any work, they were forced to not supervise, but to work with them. Because in the New Zealand Army and the Canadian Army, the officers and the men and the NCOs work alongside the men, and they mess with the men. And they didn't like the discrimination they had in the British Army. And I think it was a good education for our officers and NCOs.
I think you said that at this time you were working with Women's Land Army.
Oh, yes.
Well.
We had a couple of girls, Women's Land Army, working alongside us, felling trees. And there was one girl with enormous biceps, very attractive girl. And we got talking to her. She said, you know, I used to work in an office in the city, and I was considered as very delicate. Anyway, she was not so delicate, and she said, I'm having the time of my life doing this outdoor work, and I don't think I'll ever go back to the city. Anyway, when we were out in Borden, we were friendly with quite a number of the Canadians, and when the Dieppe raid was on, we heard the bombers going over, and many of our friends from the Canadian camps who went over to Dieppe didn't come back, which was very painful. And also when we were at Borden, we heard the Lancasters going over to bomb the Edertal Dam, which went very low over our huts, and the huts vibrated when they went over, and we always wished them luck when they went over. Anyway, when we were down at White Hill, when we got past to go to London, we either went to Haslemere on the White Hill bus, which goes from White Hill via Hindhead Haslemere to Midhurst. I've used it many times since the war. Or we went on the railway, on the military railway. And once at Christmas time, we were not permitted a pass, because we should not clog up the railways, because the railways were that time reserved for the civilians. Well, we all kept civilian kit under our beds, and I had especially bought a pair of trousers and a a golf jacket, which I could fit over my uniform and raincoat, and I was wearing this over my uniform, and unfortunately the khaki collar stuck out, and somebody pointed out to me and pushed it in that it wouldn't show up. But it was a nice country there. White Hill is not far from Headley. When we went on the bus from White Hill to Haslemere, we passed Headley, and that was a glasshouse of the Canadians, big high palisades. Glasshouse means the prison, military prison. And it's a very pleasant garden city today, Headley.
At what point was it that you changed your name to Peter Johnson?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. When we were at Petersfield, I think, we were asked it was suggested that we should change our names as we were already done for 21st Army Group, 21st Army Group being the base of British Liberation Army, the BLA, as we who were scheduled to go to France. And it was suggested that we should change our names, at least those who had foreign-sounding names. And when we got to White Hill, we all went down to the telephone box and got out the telephone books and chose names from that, if we hadn't decided on anything. Well, my name had been Wolfgang Josefs, Wolfgang after Amadeus Mozart and Wolfgang Goethe. And Josefs was a rather unusual name in Germany. And I didn't change because of the surname so much, but because of my first name, knowing that my father was in Holland, which was at that time under German occupation. And I wanted to keep my initial WJ, and so I chose Peter William Johnson. Peter was my nickname anyway. I wanted to keep the W so I could draw the W into the J into the signature. And Johnson, I was contemplating calling myself Jordan after the judge in Sydney, who had been very helpful to us in refugees when we were in the camps. But then I thought Jordan is a more biblical name than Joseph's. So I chose Johnson after Samuel Johnson, whom I could not ever equal literally, but I thought it was just as well to call myself Johnson, because you could pronounce it in any Germanic language, be it Swedish Johansson, or German Johnson, or in English Johnson. And so it stuck. After the war, I in a way regretted that I didn't change back, because my father was killed at Auschwitz, and there is no Josephs in our family on the male line alive. They're all females, the Josephs, and so our name will probably has died out. Anyway, I got a little certificate from the Army Council dated February 1942, I think, that my name had been changed from Wolfgang Josefs to Peter William Johnson, Army number 1310-8765, I think, under Army Council instructions, which meant that I did not have to pay a fee for having changed my name.
How did you feel about the news that you'd be going overseas?
Well, we knew when we became 21st Army Group in England, when we got the flash by 21st Army Group, we knew we were going to the continent. We were looking forward to it because we felt we were stagnating in England.